DP, a weekly podcast talking about high school and college sports right here in Central Illinois. I'll discuss what I saw in the past week, what's coming up on Channel 1450, and what we're looking forward to. Episode 39 of Season 3, we're closing in on 3 straight years of weekly podcasts keeping you up to date on all things high school and college sports in the Springfield area. And we still have no sponsor. Please reach out if you're interested. One quick note, the 3rd annual Channel 1450 Awards will be held Wednesday, June 26th at the LRS Hangar at the airport. Please make plans to attend. We will be announcing the fall sports nominees within the next week. All right, let's get to what I saw in the past week here in Central Illinois. Last Thursday, I went to Jacksonville for a quick stop for some signing day interviews. 12 Crimsons made their college decisions. Then I drove exactly the speed limit to Pleasant Plains for the soccer game. The Cardinals and the Crimsons were battling. Plains wins 3-0, scoring the 3rd goal with 10 minutes to play in the game. The biggest worry is Ella Wilcoxon, who left in the first half with an injury, did not return, hoping for the best for her. Friday and Saturday, I was in St. Louis for my sister-in-law's wedding, so no sports for me. On Monday, I was at Sacred Heart Griffin for the Rochester matchup. The first of 2 scheduled, the Monday one was the non-conference matchup. The Central State 8-1 that counts for the standings was scheduled for Tuesday. It will now be played on Thursday. Gotta love the CS8 schedule this year. Regardless, the Rockets jump on the Cyclones early. They win 10-0. AJ Runkle gets the win on the mound. A nice young talent for Matt Carlson. On Tuesday, we were rained out. On Wednesday, Glenwood at Rochester Soccer. The past 2 sectional championships have been between these 2 teams. Glenwood wins this matchup by a score of 3-0. Ryland Law scores 2 goals in the first half. Abby Stevens gets a shutout. Glenwood takes control of the CS8 conference with most of their big games out of the way. All right, what's coming up on Channel 1450? On Thursday, we are planning to catch Williamsville at Porta Softball, SHG at Rochester Baseball, and Olympia at Auburn Softball. On Friday, a very busy schedule. Lincolnland Baseball is at home starting at 2 p.m. Springfield High is at Pleasant Plains for soccer. Glenwood Girls Track is hosting a big meet, and the Rocket Track invite is Friday in Rochester as well. Washington Baseball is at Glenwood, and the SHG Girls Soccer Tournament gets started with Rochester versus Q&D at 4. Then SHG plays New Lenox Providence Catholic at 6. Winners of those Friday games play Saturday at 9:45 in the semifinals, and the championship is at 1:45 at SHG. Also Saturday, SHG is at Glenwood for baseball. That's an 11 a.m. start at Bob Erickson Field. Make sure to tune in to 1450 AM 92.3 FM because they will have that one on the radio as well. All right, looking ahead to next Monday, the Pleasant Plains Girls Soccer Tournament gets underway with a handful of area teams. We'll keep an eye on that one all week long. Taylorville Baseball, who beat Jacksonville, is at Rochester for the Route 29 rivalry game. Tri-City is at SHG for softball, Athens is at Springfield High for softball, and Taylorville is at Rochester for softball as well. On Tuesday, April 23rd, we've got Athens at Williamsville Baseball, Plains at New Berlin Baseball, Athens at Williamsville Softball, Maroa at Olympia Softball, Rochester at Glenwood Softball, Glenwood at Rochester Baseball, and Route at Mount Pulaski Baseball. Another loaded Tuesday slate. Next Wednesday, Williamsville and Lutheran High signing day, as well as Lincoln. Games scheduled to keep an eye on: Mount Zion and Plains Baseball, Pittsfield at New Berlin Baseball, Mount Zion at Plains Softball, U-High at Glenwood Softball non-conference, Rochester at Glenwood Baseball non-conference, Springfield High at SHG Baseball non-conference as well. And the nightcap next Wednesday, Milliken at Lincolnland Baseball. All right, that's what's coming up on Channel 1450, as well as the Channel 1450 Award nominees, 5 student athletes from each sport and conference. Check out the website for all the details. That's coming up shortly. Let's get to this week's guest, Rochester baseball head coach Matt Carlson, who surpassed 400 career wins last week and is continuing to add to that total. Here's Matt. All right, I'm joined this week by Matt Carlson to talk all things baseball. I want to talk some dad stuff too, because I find that way more interesting at this point in my life. But first of all, just got to say congratulations on 400. That's a major accomplishment, a good milestone. And I mean, how's that feel?
It's you feel old, but I've enjoyed it. I mean, you know, I look at the guys in the area that I've seen accomplish these feats, like big numbers, and Pat at Chatham and Jim, Coach Steinwert, and Coach Greer, like the area guys that you've seen do it, Coach Heineman. A lot of good guys that, you know, it's a good feeling to know that you've kind of persevered through a lot of things for a long time. Right. So that's good.
That's a pretty special club, just those names alone to say that you're a part of. I mean, as you started this, did you have a number in mind? Did you have a goal? Did you just say, hey, I love this, I'm going to do it? And now you look back and you're like, oh, well, now let's go for 500. Or
I think it's just like always, baseball's just always driven me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I enjoy baseball as a young kid, and like, it was like what I looked forward to. I enjoyed going to White Sox games. I know there's not a lot of White Sox people around here, but like, going to those games and like, I liked watching them on TV. I listened to them on the radio. I'm old enough to do that, you know. And then I got to college. You know, when I went to college, I think it was a huge motivator for me. So that's one of the reasons why I'm such an advocate of extracurriculars for kids, because I think that there are a lot of kids that are motivated by extracurriculars to finish whatever they're doing. So I think it was a big motivator for me for college, you know. I mean, I ended up with a math major and playing 4 years of baseball at college. And then, like, when I got out of college, I knew I wanted to coach, too. And I think it's a motivator as an educator, because, like, there's days where, as an educator, it's kind of, like, mundane. And, you know, you're just like, oh, my God. But you definitely look forward to your athletic season, or at least I do, and looking forward to having the kids in a different atmosphere and, like, enjoying that time. And I really, I mean, so, no, I've never had a number. I don't care about that much, but I enjoy the kids getting better at stuff. Like, I love having them in the classroom and seeing them improve whatever area it is. I like seeing them in the baseball field and then seeing them improve. So that's fun for me.
First memory of baseball for you? What is it?
Playing when I was young in T-ball, yeah. Turning a triple play. Yeah. I was playing shortstop, cut a line drive, and stepped on second and stepped on first and ran to first because nobody else knew what was going on. Yeah. But I watched enough and knew enough and was smart enough that's my first memory of playing baseball. I could tell you what uniform I was in and all that stuff. Yeah, fun.
That's awesome because I was thinking about it this year. Actually, you know, we caught one with Rochester softball, a triple play. Michael did. And even the way he filmed it, he didn't know what, like, it was like, oh my gosh, that just happened. Like, holy cow. And I literally was thinking about it like the week before. I was like, I've shot a lot of baseball games, a lot of softball games, and I've never gotten a triple play. Really? And then that happened, like, literally that next week where Michael got one, and I was like, dang it. Like, that's so cool. But, like, that's one of those things. You talk about, like, the math side of things that, like, with baseball and numbers, do you see a similarity there compared to other sports where you as a math guy can really be more of a baseball guy? Is that – do you get what I'm trying to say there?
Yeah, I think it just – I think the math is like pushing edges. I tell the kids that. I use that term, pushing edges, on the kids. Like, where can we find an advantage where maybe we score an extra run over the course of 3 or 4 games that helps us go over the top?
Yeah.
That maybe other people don't look at? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? From that, and I'm looking at it from that perspective. Somebody else probably, you know, I'm sure Dave doesn't look at it from the math perspective, but he's got a different way, you know. God knows what's going through his head. And then, you know, Coach Stein worked the same way. Like, I'm sure they got different ways, but I guess that math perspective for me, like, what do the numbers say is going to get us to more runs over the course of the season? I think that's valuable.
Right. Because I think, I mean, you could talk to Derek about, you know, 4th and 4 or whatever, but I think that his rules are a little bit different based on 4 downs and, you know, Rochester football in general. But when it comes to the analytics and stuff, how much do you put into that, studying that for your baseball team?
I like to know all those numbers. I like to know what how hard kids hit balls. I like to know how hard they're throwing the ball. I like to know those things, but I also have to have the playability. Like, just because a kid throws the ball 90 miles an hour, if they don't throw enough strikes, I don't have a lot of use for that. Like, you got to be able to throw the ball over the plate. So, like, there's that give and take from the analytics side of it that's, I mean, I think they're valuable, but I also think you got playability in there that you have to be able to, you know, it's a lot, it's complicated, and it's not like we're dealing with the best athletes in the world at, like, Major League Baseball or an NFL or anything like that.
Well, we've had a few of those, but
we got one right now, and I'm super proud of them right now, and I'm happy to follow them. But it's just, you know, I think you look at them and you evaluate them, but, like, the ultimate thing is to put the best team you can on the field that performs. So, like, you got to figure that out too.
Right. Sorry, I'm sort of bouncing around here.
No, you're good.
A lot of different thoughts, but I want to go back to, you know, just kind of you getting into coaching, the baseball side of things. And like you said, you wanted to continue to be in baseball, but what did you kind of learn as you started coaching that was like, okay, I got to do this to be a good coach and not just, I know baseball well, but that doesn't mean that I'm a good baseball coach.
I think that's a great point. Like, I had that discussion with somebody the other day. I think it's coaching against Derek, and I actually had this discussion. I think part of it is clinics and stuff that you go to. I think, but a bigger chunk of it is opportunities to coach with other coaches and coach against other coaches and realize how they're beating you and how are they. Like, Coach Steinwart, I take a lot from what watching his teams play, and Coach Greer watching his team play, Coach Butchery and Coach Furlow when they're at Williamsville, Coach Henneman. Like, watching those guys, like, and seeing how they evolved, and maybe maybe they did what they did, but also the way the team performed, maybe they changed it up. Like, I remember Waynesville was really good when we started and had a really good squad coming through. A lot of guys that could hit. Would they bunt still? Yes. But he'd let them hit a little bit. Mm-hmm. So they talk about it. You know, Waynesville's big in a bunt. You know, you knew that. But, like, watching the guys do different things to maximize what they had was, yes, you know the game. But, like, being able to kind of manipulate that. And to be honest, I coached soccer for a couple of years. Watching Chad do that a little bit and, like, manipulate things, I think has been super valuable. So I think that's where you learn a lot of things from people. And, like, you don't – I don't know. I don't feel like you should stop. Like, the more I, like, go to clinics and go to – like, I spent a lot of time with Coach Funkhauser the last couple of years at Edwardsville. Super good with infield stuff. And I've learned a ton of things about how to teach my infielders that I didn't – that I knew before. Like, I watched the kids do it, and you know it. But then when you see how to verbalize it so that they understand it and then see them pick it up, you're like, oh, all that stuff matters. And it's just little things you pick up over time. It's, to me, that's a lot of fun. Like, I enjoy getting better at that stuff and being around good people. I've been super fortunate to be, you know, I feel like our area is super rich in good coaches. And I've really been fortunate to have guys around us. And it's not just the head coaches either, right? Like, you got assistant coaches that have been longtime guys. Springfield High, very fortunate to have some longtime and good staff over there, you know. And it's just, you learn a lot from those guys being around those. Coach Torricelli, Coach Riggle, like, they'll put on some things every once in a while you get to. And super valuable, like, all that stuff to me. Watching other coaches coach. I remember watching having LT come over here one year and stop and talk to him for 5 minutes. And I was like, what are you doing here? You know, I don't even think Southeast was playing. I think it was a football game. And he's like, I came over to watch the best coach. And I was like, it's a great point. Like, he was just saying it in jest. But, like, I don't know. I took that a little deeper. And, like, you're making a good point. And watching those guys in basketball, watching Tony this year, like, find a way to make our teams competitive. But maybe we're out manipulating other areas. Right. You know what I mean? I think it's, I don't know, that's fun.
Yeah, you can tell that you're excited about that, and that's something that, like, you want to continue to get better at. And, you know, you talk about having Derek in the building and Chad in the building. Those are two pretty good guys to talk about. You know, they know their stuff, but they also know how to relay that message. So at what point did you kind of learn, okay, I can know something, but I have to learn how to communicate that and be able to teach that to 16, 14, 15, 16, 17 year old kids? And that's probably a bigger hurdle than most people quite understand.
I don't think you ever stop figuring that part out.
Yeah.
Because I think that it changes.
Well, kids,
like,
yeah.
I mean, kids have changed so much, right? Like, you've got this technology age. You're 100% right. Like, how you communicate with a kid right now is totally different than what I would have done when I first started. And I don't think I was wrong when I first started. I don't think it's wrong now. I think it just changes, and you have to try your best to continue to, you know, figure out and have conversations with kids. Like, I'm always asking my guys, like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And they probably think I'm annoying, like, old man, but I'm trying to figure out, how do I relay this information to you for you to perform what I want you to do the best? And I think that, like you said, we got so many good ones around here. Lindsay does a great job with the softball team. JR and Brandon with the basketball girls.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You see those, and, you know, Derek and I talked about this the other day about, like, you can't try to just copy what they do because that doesn't work. It doesn't work with your personality. It doesn't work with my personality. You have to, like, look at what they do, see what you can implement, and then kind of use it within your personality, right? So, like, it's always, to me, that's always growth and things that you can grow with.
Well, I think, too, and I've talked a lot with a lot of Chatham coaches, where the stability within the program and the longevity of the coaches, it doesn't matter if it's Vondel and David Hay or whoever. Like, once those guys are there long enough, they sit there and have conversations, and yeah, they're probably dealing with some crossover athletes, but like you said, everything's different, the sports are different, but just to have a program where you have the same kids, you have the same community, I think that there's major something to that, where if you look at the success that Glenwood's had and Rochester's had, it can't quite be emulated with 186 the same way. And so, like, that's why we see you guys being as successful as we are. And, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to bash anybody by any means, but I think that there's something too, like you said, the 400 means you've been here for a long time, and that's something that you can say, hey, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, I understand what it takes, so if you guys just buy in. At what point did you kind of learn, you know, I got to get the kids to buy in? Because for Derek, it's probably pretty easy. You just say, hey, if you do what I tell you to do, you show up in the weight room all summer, we'll get a ring at some point. And that's crazy to think, but, I mean, that's the standard. And so...
No, I mean, I got a kid on that just went through that, yeah, right? And like, yeah. It's pretty easy to motivate. Hey, man, you're working towards, you know what you're working towards, right? We haven't had that much success. We've had a lot of success. We had a lot of wins, but like, we haven't gotten to that mm-hmm. pinnacle, right? Like, that you're trying to. But I try hard to get them to buy in on stuff, but it's just not that hard with our guys. I feel really good about, like, they see it and they know it and they just go execute it. Yeah. Like, I haven't had too many years where it's been difficult to get guys to buy in. Like, especially the guys who aren't getting the time that they'd like to get, that's different. But, like, the guys who are getting there and want to get better, it's just been, we've been fortunate that part's easy uh-huh. here. And I can't imagine what it is like in other districts where you don't have that buy-in. Like, our kids are fundamentally bought in. I feel like they want to be good athletes. They want our programs. They see a program doing good over here. It's just like a motivator.
See that kind of basketball right now. It's like, okay, you know, we need to get this level up because this isn't Rochester, you know.
And you hear about it in the classroom. Yeah. I hear those same. We have those conversations in the classroom.
Yeah.
You know, so I get that, all that stuff, and I agree with you, but I can't imagine being in a district where it is difficult every year for all these sports and how it's got to be talked down upon. And you know, we're just very fortunate. That's why I'm in a fortunate place to coach. That's one of the reasons why I've gotten this number of wins. Like, I'm lucky that I fell into a place that has that kind of drive towards athletics. So
you talked about it, but like going to clinics and learning new things is something that excites you. With the longevity of getting past that 400, and you know, you could easily say, "Hey, this is clearly working for me. Let's do it this way." In baseball, and I feel like especially now in the age of technology, you have to learn and adapt every single year. So what is the biggest thing that you do to make sure that you're still a student of the game, especially baseball, which can be so – it can change. I mean, a lot of things can change, I feel like.
I do my best to go have conversations with people just on the side. And like I say, I go to clinics, but like at the same time – Eli's involved in a competitive program out of St. Louis, so I get to talk to the O'Fallon coach, Joe Bauer, who's a great guy, Scott Sipe, and then Tim Funkhauser down at Edwardsville. There's some guys around the Missouri side that you get to talk to and just kind of talk about what they do, how they do things, and what they're seeing with things. Watching other guys coach, like it matters. Like, I watch pregame and what they're doing beforehand and like how their system works and how their setup was and what they're trying to do, and then see how it relates to the game. And like, I just try to keep watching that to see what kind of changes they make, because then can adjust. And like you said, the clinic stuff is another one too, where, you know, there's some things that have gone on with infield work and with outfield play that's been different. Swings, you know, teaching swings. I mean, take it as simple as teaching swings. When I was taught a swing, like, I was taught how to cut down on the baseball and like hit line drives, hit the ball on the ground, run fast, right? Like, that was like the 80s and the 90s, like early 90s. But then evolution happens, and like, you got to realize that things are changing and guys are getting better. It doesn't mean that what you were doing before wasn't good, and maybe you need pieces of it, but like, every piece of the game is altering all the time, and if you're not adjusting, you're going to get behind really fast.
You talked about watching other coaches. How much do coaches judge each other based on how well they can hit the ball in infield practices? I've always wondered that, as they just sit there and kind of everyone's watching them, because it's like, oh, I missed that, or oh, leave it. It's like, how much do I'm sort of joking, but also like,
oh no,
it's got to be something.
It's not a joke. It's not a joke. It's pretty serious.
Yeah, I bet.
Don't ask Dave.
When he tore his bicep, he couldn't do it anymore. And I'm sure that tore him.
Oh, that was probably an excuse.
Yeah, right. No, I'm just
kidding. Oh no, there's a good one. Who gave it to me the other day? Turner gave me one the other day because I didn't get my catcher pop up in the circle, and he was right. He's right. He's giving it. That's the way we motivate each other a little bit. Yeah,
you guys got to get better too.
Right? Oh yeah, we give each other. If you can't fungo, if you can't throw BP, you can't fungo. What are we doing out here? No, we give it. We got to. Yeah, that's always fun for us.
How much have you learned to be a better coach by watching other coaches coach your son?
I think that what I think I've learned about that is like how to be patient but hard at the same time instead of being so fast and frustrated. You know, I mean, when it's your own kid,
yeah.
There's an expectation you do it right. I already told you one time, do it right this way. And you know, with other people's kids, you give them a lot more leeway and you have conversations like, so like you watch people do that. And you're like, man, I got to do a better job of like giving them a little more time to learn something we just did instead of getting frustrated. So I think that's what you learn is like, okay, how can I take a deep breath, relax and show them this. And then like, what pieces of the puzzle is that coach trying to give him so that he completes whatever part of the game he's trying to get better at, right? So like, okay, what's he talking about with his swing there? Oh, okay, what's he talking about with him analytically as far as like approach to this at bat, you know? And like, how is Eli taking that in, or any player to be honest? And then okay, how can I be a little bit more patient with explaining that, staying, trying to get ahead of it before the situation happens, but also, you know, try and be firm with it too. You know, I think that I've gotten better with that. It's still hard, but yeah. I think I've gotten better with that.
Now, I may have asked a form of this question 4 years ago when we sat down with you and your wife, but I feel like it's, you know, kind of the follow-up here. When you talk about you coaching Eli, does it help to have conversations with your wife about, you know, how she handled things with your daughter and whether that was not necessarily her coaching her, but just the way that interaction has to work before games, after games, stuff like that? Do you guys have those conversations as a family?
Not really. Stacy didn't really coach Eva too much in volleyball outside of, like some rec stuff,
yeah.
and some light stuff. And I've always coached Eli. In everything, you know, in baseball,
yeah.
Like he's gotten other stuff. So I try to do my best to. I'm sure he would like me to be talk to him less,
mm-hmm.
but like I always feel like if I can help you with something, I'm going to spew it out.
Yeah.
So like it's hard to. So no, we don't have a ton of conversations about that. I don't think they go very well. All the time. So, but yeah, I mean,
But do you still have conversations with her about the coaching side of things?
Oh, yeah. She rides me pretty hard about getting me, stay easy on him. You know, you're too hard on him. You do this. And that's like, oh, yeah, you're probably right. You know, she's probably right most of the time.
Right.
And it's hard. It's just hard because you want the best for him. You see what's going on and you can see a path to positive things in whatever area it might be, whether it's pitching or hitting or defense, whatever it might be. And then it's not being executed and you're just like, okay, or mindset or attitude or whatever it might be, you know, you're just like, it's hard.
I had some pretty emotional conversations, as you saw in the fall with Coach Beaker, about being able to coach his son and the success that they, not only him and those two had, but just the relationships that he had with that entire team because they've all grown up together. How do you feel with this team? Is this team kind of special just because of that aspect as well?
Yeah, so when Eli was seven, the first competitive team he played on was actually with these guys when they were eight. So he played with them for a year. And so, yeah, I do. I mean, like, PL has been, like, our main catcher. He played a lot of first base and some third base then, and PG has been in the middle, right? And we actually didn't have Jet and Tyson around with us. But Aiden was in that group, Eli, and then some other guys. So definitely when we got that, I was like, man, this is going to be a group, and I'm excited to have them.
Yeah.
I've been telling them that for a while. And they're just such a good group of kids. Like, they're just good people. PG will never say boo. Like, he just, yes, he's like, yes, sir, no, sir. And PL's that way, too. Like, they're just great kids. Aiden is a great kid. They're all just great kids. And, like, you knew they were good athletically when they were young, so it's been a lot of fun to, you know, with them being a year older than Eli, they kind of separated a little bit, and Eli went on a different path as far as competitive baseball. But, yeah, being around these guys, I mean, they've been a lot of fun for a long time.
But like you said, not only are they seem like a special group, I don't know them as well, but I feel like I've been around them quite a bit. But also just the fact that so many of them play so many different sports and have seen the success, whether it be soccer going to state, football winning a state title, basketball obviously having success this year. And clearly we see that with the people who are getting scholarships to go play at the next level. This is a talented group that if they work together and are a team, I mean, that's a two pretty good things to have as a coach. So what do you see in terms of this team and how special they can be based on kind of those two factors of the talent is clearly there and the chemistry sort of thing?
I don't really have to worry about chemistry. Like, I've had groups where I have to worry about that. And that's really the thing that's special about them. Like, I think that maybe that's your question and your point, but, like, they don't point fingers at each other. Yeah. They point it at themselves first, and then they go forward. It's easy to coach a group like that when they're like that. And they just – you don't have to worry about that stuff. You got – these guys just buy in. They've had success with other things. So they're just easy on that from that aspect. I've had groups where you got to pull guys in and be like, look, guys, you two got to get it together here. Yeah. You two are pulling us apart. I've had those conversations. Yeah. That's not true. Now, does this group have trouble going up and down sometimes? Yeah, emotionally. We get a little too high, a little too low sometimes. And, like, I think everybody probably knows what's going to carry us is, like, we have a pretty good offensive group and yeah. pretty fortunate there to be good.
Knock on wood, we say that. Yes, I say that. And now this comes out Thursday and you guys get shut out the next two days.
We could. We definitely could. And that's what happened last time. We had like three straight games where we didn't hit. It was a problem. But, you know, overall in the end of the year, I mean, I think that we're going to be fine in that way. And so as long as they stay positive in that area, we're going to just be fine. And I don't think they'll have that much of an issue with that stuff. And they embrace everybody. Like, you know, AJ Runkle's made a kind of an imprint on this team, and like he hasn't been around those guys that much, and they just embrace him. Like they just, oh, you're part of the group. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's kind of been the way that group's been for a long time. Like, if you're with us, you're with us. Let's go.
Yeah.
And if you're not with us, that's fine. But see ya. You know what I mean? And I think that starts with, you know, it doesn't. I mean, PL's that way, and PG's that way, and Aiden's that way, and you know, Jet's that way. Jet's super easy going, you know, and Jack's been really easy. He was a nice fit in here, and Tyson. I don't even mention Tyson a couple of times, but like Tyson's like super quiet, and super easy going, and like if you watch him on the field, how many times you see him smiling at people and like joking with people? Like, he's not a huge extroverted kid, but like, you'll see them smile, like they're embracing people. So it's been easy with that from that aspect. Now, I'm knock on wood because tomorrow would be hard. Somebody breaks up with somebody, and you never know.
Like, that's,
But the chemistry's been, and I think it's just those guys get along and they're willing to embrace whoever if they're going to help them.
Yeah.
So
you touched on it a little bit, but I just want to kind of talk a little bit more about, you know, adding Jack to the mix in terms of clearly he's a Division I talent and, you know, could go farther than that. A lot of things have to go the right way, but to have a talent like that come in and also have a talent like that come in who got the experience from Jim of winning a state title, especially the way they did, which was just, I don't know, one of those stories that I'll never forget in terms of following it and being able to cover it. But like, what does he bring to the table in terms of just that experience and that sort of kind of veteran, you know, leadership, maybe not the right word, but just that sort of experience of being that guy?
I think he's one that finds it easiest to stay even keel in big moments instead of getting too high, too low. I mean, he's a kid, so he's still learning that overall, but I think that's the experience part, is like staying focused and staying even when the moments get big to allow him to have success. And I think the other kids do feed off that. You know, when he gets way too excited, they're like, whoa, 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 let's hang out. And if he gets too low, it's like, whoa, hey. But I think that they feed off of him when he's even. And you see it a lot more when he pitches, probably, because he just has to – you have to compete at a different level mentally when you're there. But that's where he makes an imprint on the team. It's just like how even keel. He knows the game all the time. So, like, he's usually ahead of plays and knowing where ball should go. And, like, how a batch should go in order for us to have success as a group, but like he brings that to the table of like, I think being in that group and just knowing like we can't get too high here or too low here and just staying kind of middle of the road. Now, do you get excited at times? Yes. And do you get a little bit frustrated? But like finding that middle of the road and playing in that middle of the road, I think has been big for us.
Now, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but I want to, you know, just give you a chance to talk about it a little bit more. But we talked to you when we got the chance to go to Omaha and follow Louisville when they made it to the World Series. But now that Tyler's been through such a long process since then, and to have the success, knock on wood again, that he's having right now, I mean, it's got to be so cool to watch just knowing how much work that kid put in.
You just can't. I mean, I don't know if I told you that before, but I can tell you stories of coming back after games when he was younger, before his senior year. Obviously, senior year is fine, and junior year, pretty good, right? But, like, those first couple years, like, the nights where he'd have an error, and he'd be like, Coach, can I take more ground balls? And then we'd coming back from an away game, coming back, taking more ground balls, or taking more BP. And, like, people don't get that. Like, or driving by the park on a Sunday, and somebody's hitting him ground ball after ground ball, and people are like, whoa, I can be good. Yeah, you got to put in a lot of time and effort here. It's not just, you know, and since Tyler's been gone, that phase is included. Now strength and conditioning has been so much better. You know, you got Jared doing it. You got Kurt, you got HPC. You got these facilities that are getting these kids stronger and bigger. And that wasn't a thing when Tyler was going through. No. So, like, incorporating all these things that if you really want to have big success – and put yourself in position, just to put yourself in position to have that kind of
everything
success.
Everything has to go right, too.
You have like, that's to, yes.
It's not and a guarantee, too. That's the crazy part.
It's crazy. And like, the other day we were talking, I can't remember, actually, I think Eli and I were talking about, Eli was mad because Tyler on the show doesn't have a 99% for speed, and yet he's 99% for speed in MLB. Like, they know, everybody knows how fast he is.
Yeah,
he's stealing bags left and right, whenever he wants to. Well,
that's not a thing anymore, really.
No, I mean, but like, you know, to get special athletes like that is a lot of fun, and Tyler's it's fun to follow. I root for him all the time. I've told him like 5 times I wish that the White Sox would trade for him. I'm sure he wants no part of being on the White Sox team
right now.
I don't blame him. But I, you know, just to have him closer to follow even easier. But like, you know, I remember I went home. So that first game he had was pretty rough the other, you know, to start the season. And I talked to his mom a little bit. I was like, he'd be fine. He's going to be fine. He's going to do well. And then that next day, we got rained out or something happened where I got to go home really quick after school and watch his second start, and then he goes 3 for 3 and had a big game.
It's so baseball,
it was awesome.
Man. Yeah.
It was awesome. I love seeing those kids do well. And then, you know, you're following all these guys, Cam, and it's fun. That's a lot of fun.
What does it say about him as a person and just the kind of mental side of things of, you know, he went to Louisville and had, you know, probably more than a dozen teammates who he played with who – got drafted, made their way up in 1, 2, 3 years and made it, you know. That doesn't happen, and clearly he had to work for it. He had to wait. He had to – I mean, what does it say about him as a person just kind of mentally to fight through that and say, when I get my chance, I'm going to make the most of it?
Yeah, I mean, he's just on a different level mentally because he just won't quit. I think that's the one thing that I would say. Like, he just doesn't have a quit switch. Mm-hmm. And, like, you just can't. You can't have a quit switch in that. You just got to be like, I'm just going to keep going. This is what I want to do, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And that's special people in whatever areas. They don't have a quit towards that, right? Like, whether it's a businessman, whatever. I'm going to get to this level, and I'm going to do it. Figure it out, you know what I mean? And he just doesn't have it in him, so he's not going to let a bad spot or a bad situation or somebody putting up a roadblock in his spot. You know, the number one prospect in the Giants organization was shortstop the entire time he was going up. So, like, you can sit there and cry about it, or you can just continue to get better and, like, see where the chips fall. And I keep telling I tell all of our guys that stuff. You can't worry about what's in front of you. You just got to see yours and just keep going. And, like, whatever happens, happens. If you don't make it, you don't make it. But don't be the guy that's like, well, I could have made it if I tried hard. Like, that guy is at a bar talking. You know what I mean? Like, be the guy who just does as much as you can. You know what? And be the guy in the bar who's like, you know what? I did everything I could, and that's where I got to.
Right.
And that was the best I had. And I think that's what it shows. Like, he's just, different when it comes to that mentally. Different.
I'm sure as long as you've been doing this, you've had the experience of guys coming back and saying thank you as a coach for, you know, what you did for them as they, you know, went through their high school career. But, you know, like you said earlier, you don't care about 400, what the numbers. But what are your goals as a baseball coach here in Rochester for the next however long you want to do it?
I want every kid to get to be the best player that they can be and play at the highest level they want to play at. And whatever I can do to help them on that journey, I want them to help them at. And whether they play one inning for me, for the high school team, or every inning, I want them to know that that's what I wanted for them, and that's, and feel that I gave that to them. I tried to make them and help them and push them and, you know, teach them to be that, that player that they wanted to be, and person, like, along the way too. But I want, definitely from a baseball perspective, as a player, I want to help them as much as I can so that they grow as much as they can. And then as a person, like, obviously I feel like the team sports does that for you. I feel like if you, in order to be on a team, you have to find a way to be, like, immerse yourself within the team, find your role, and execute it. You know what I mean? So I think that that kind of takes care of itself. But I want those kids to come out and know that that's what I was trying to give them, and feel like, yeah, he gave me everything he could to make me the best player he could, and that's where it was, regardless of where they become or where they go.
Yeah. I had the conversation with Coach Steinmore after they won the state title, and he, you know, he kind of joked about it, but, you know, sort of serious of, you know, I finally won a state title, and that's just because I've taken all those losses and been here so long. But at the same time, that kind of speaks to just how hard it is, especially, I mean, in any state, but I feel like the talent in Central State 8 around here, I mean, you got to, if you can win a sectional, you know, things can fall your way. But, I mean, what do you see as, in terms of, you know, your future, the Rochester future, in terms of how that could break for you, and do you see that happening ever, in terms of how special that would be?
Oh, it'd be really special. I mean, we've gotten really close to going three times now, and every time, you know, the same thing was true. We had at least one or two guys on the mound that could really shut down the opposing team, and we had enough offense to be dynamic, and we had guys that could catch it and field it, right? Yeah. And get out. So, like, all those things kind of came together on those three groups. But then, like you said, it's just got to be right, you know. Last year, do we make that run if we run into Blake Walters? I don't know.
Yeah.
We might lose a game earlier, right? Do we go further if their shortstop doesn't make six plays that are outstanding? Probably. You know, back in 2010 it was, I think. I can't remember the year exactly off the top of my head, but we run into Derek Thompson at T-Town, who gets drafted by the White Sox, a lefty, and I was like, I thought we had a chance that with that group, with, you know, Taylor Hill and Jared Pellman and Tony Nika, and, you know, that group was, Blake Gann was in that group, and John Gilson, and, you know, we had a really good group at that point. I think Sammy was on that, Sammy Jokaitis. I can name all those guys that were, Seth Warren was part of that group. Really good group, right? I'm probably missing somebody, and I don't mean to leave anybody out, but, like, I thought that group had a chance to maybe get there and do some damage, and we just ran into a buzzsaw because the Thompson kid had a great day. So
yeah.
You do what you do. And who we lost to? Oh, and then we ran into Maton. You know, we just run into guys, and I think, A, you have to avoid those. You have to find a way to avoid that guy, right? Because he's probably winning all of his games. So you got to get lucky there. Or you have to find a way to have him have an off day, or make him have an off day.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Edwardsville's one, or they went back to back, right?
Yeah.
4A. I mean, that's not all luck, right? Like, something had to go their way. But they also, their number two pitcher last year is going to Alabama. Like, they got some dudes. So, like, it helps when you have that kind of stuff. And, but, you know, Jim will tell you, like, he had a magical run that way. And, you hope you have those kind of runs, but there's a lot of things that go in a fall in place. And, I mean, it'd be really nice to do it all, but, like, if you don't get there, you don't get there. Like, I'm going to try everything we can.
Right. But like you said earlier, too, just the opportunity to coach as long as you have, and now get to coach your son, has to be special, and see these guys that he's friends with, and just to get to be that guy to be around him. Because, I mean, that's something that I'm sure you'll look back on in 10 years and be like, I got to spend more time with Eli during that time when that's something that, you know, you didn't really think about right now.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun to... I hope that I'm not too hard on him, because I know I am. But, like... But you just want him, you know, he's your kid. You got your own kids. You want them to have the best that they can have. You want to put them in positions for them to have success. You want to do all those things. But at the same time, you want them to grow and learn. So you want them to have the hardships so that they learn and exceed. But, like, yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, it's fun to coach him, and I'm proud of him. And he just has – and he's in that – you edit whatever you want, but like, he's in that boat too. Like, where I'm just trying to help him become, he has major aspirations in baseball, and so I want to help him be the best player he can be, because if he wants to go on to play, whether it's at a Division III, a Division II, JUCO, whatever it is, it doesn't matter, but like, gotta help him get better and keep getting better.
Yeah.
And he's kind of gotten a raw deal from a perspective of like, we were so light when he was a freshman that we had to have him up there to do stuff, and he wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get ready, but we needed him to pitch, and I didn't have enough people to play. It was just a weird spot, and so he's in over his head hitting, but he had to hit in spots because of this and that, and it's like, so he hasn't gotten to have, it's a lot of fun to coach a kid, but you feel for him when they're struggling, and you want the best for him, but when they have success, it's really nice for them too. And it's hard to maintain your composure all the time with some things. I mean, I've gone out to the mound and ripped them pretty hard.
Yeah.
Harder than I rip other kids. And, you know, like the other one with your own kid is like the way they act. Like what you'll put up with your kid, with your son.
Yeah.
They're on the playground playing, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's spots where you're like, you're not going to do that, even though you saw another kid do it.
Yep. Yeah.
And then the same thing happens on the baseball field. I see a kid chirp at the umpire and I kind of brush it off. My kid even turns to and I'm like, you don't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's got to be hard for those kids. I feel for them, but at the same time, I wouldn't give it up for anything. That's probably pretty close to what everybody would say.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's do this again when you get to 500 or a state title, whichever comes first.
I would love for the state title to come.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks to Coach Carlson for his time and great conversation. Like I said earlier, looking for a sponsor still for the podcast. I appreciate each and every one of you who listen and follow along. Have a great week. I'll see you next week.